Hello everyone, welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast. My name's Tim Edwards, I'm the editor of PC Gamer in the UK, and today we're going to be talking about the amazing new stuff coming to World of Warcraft, 50 favourite mods, although we may mention only about 5 of them. We'll be quite rude about Champions Online, and we'll talk about how amazing marketing is in the modern games industry.
What?
No one told me about this.
Joining us in the studio today is new deputy editor, Graham Smith.
Hello.
Ooh. I mean, yay.
Tom Francis, one of our section editors.
Hello.
And Craig Pearson, who's also your news editor. What is your job title anyway?
Up until now, it was news editor.
Okay.
But now I don't know.
That's a bit weird.
Probably should be news editor, but I don't know.
Okay, cool. So if you want to get started, the new issue of PC Gamer should be landing with you very shortly. And we're on our cover is World of Warcraft Cataclysm. We've got a kind of fairly...
That's all we're going to say about that.
Yeah, that's absolutely it. We had a kind of fairly amazing moment. After BlizzCon, I drove down to Blizzard's studio in Anaheim and went to see the developers as they were kind of building the game and got a kind of fairly extensive tour of what a lot of stuff that hasn't been shown before anywhere else in the world. And so subscribers, as this comes out, should be the first people in the world to read about some of the kind of crazy stuff that's happening in WoW. So it's very exciting. You guys don't really give a shit, though, do you?
Not so much.
Okay, so fine. Well, that's it. I'll just kind of sit here and witter on amazingly about how fantastic it is and how cool it is.
I'll try and think up some questions to ask you. But,
go on in. What do you want to know?
Is it larger than a cat or smaller than a cat? Yeah.
It's a cataclysm. So it's a kind of medium-sized cat.
Okay.
If it was cataclysmic, then I would assume it would be the largest of the cats.
What is said cataclysm?
It's an enormous dragon. So
really?
The story is, yeah.
Everything's a dragon in World of Warcraft.
But it's always dragons. They're always interrupting the party. So Cataclysm is essentially a rebuilding of World of Warcraft. And what they're going to do is blow up all the old world via a dragon coming out from the underground, erupting through, causing a massive kind of crash and fire and brimstone and typhoons and earthquakes and hurricanes.
That's kind
and
of
then
dark.
They're kind of basically they're going to do a lot of killing off and a lot of kind of remolding of the environment to create areas that are no longer about killing 10 boars.
20 boars.
No.
Wow.
That's the
amazing
thing.
Why are they so keen on not 20 young doing... boars. Why are they so keen on not killing 20 boars, 10 boars anymore?
Well, because that stuff's boring. And they readily accept that. One of the things they... Wrath of Lich King is a quite different game to World of Warcraft. In there is a little bit of that, go over here and kill 10 guys, but more often the quests are more interesting, you use items, you kind of do more kind of clever things, and there's always this kind of ongoing storyline to every zone, so you always feel like you're part of something a little bit larger. The original World of Warcraft isn't like that at all, and you have to kind of be fairly masochistic to get through it. Their solution so far has been speed up your experience gain to such a ridiculous rate that you don't even notice that you're kind of still doing the same stuff because you're always moving beyond kind of different bits. Now they're essentially resetting it.
With a dragon.
It's interesting because Champions Online had the opposite thing where they had a problem in the early access version, which was not a beta, but what pre-orderers were allowed to play before the game officially came out, where... they just made the game far too easy. It was far too easy to make a character that was just incredibly good. Right. And I found this myself. I was a gadgeteer with a big chainsaw fist and a bunch of killer robots. And as soon as I had like those key powers, I could just storm through stuff that was 3 or 4 levels higher than it should be. And Bill Roper said that they had characters taking on solo stuff that was meant for 5 players minimum. And so they, across the board, they had a huge nerf of... just how effective your characters are, how quickly you gain XP and all this other stuff. And I was at level 16 when it happened, and I'm still at level 16. And it's because I've done everything up to level 19. I've done most of the level 19 missions, all the level 18 missions, all the level 17 missions, right. All the level 16 missions, and there's just nothing I can do now to progress.
I presume you can't just sit there and grind as well, which...
Well, no, because they've rather cleverly made you get almost no XP for killing monsters just on their own, because they want it to all be all about, yeah, about quests. Which in general I applaud. If you're going to dramatically change the rate of XP halfway through, it kind of screws over quite a lot of players.
So you are actually screwed now?
Yeah. And according to Cobbett, even before this happened, the quests are really thin on the ground after the first kind of 10-15 levels. Because there's that split right at the start where you can go to Canada or the desert. And so for those levels, there's two sets of missions, so you can go back and do different ones.
Canada after or that, the desert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll choose Canada.
The deserts are more interesting than the two, actually.
Yeah, by Canada, they mean just Arctic tundra. Yes. No kind of...
Okay, so white desert.
Civilization, yeah. But after that, apparently you're around sort of 20, early 20 sort of levels. There's from then on, there's only really one quest, one set of quests per level. If you, you know, run out of those and you haven't leveled up yet, you're just kind of screwed for a while. And it's just really thin on the ground. Apparently, people bitching about this on the forums, and all the hardcore players going, oh, you just played it wrong. You should have done this quest at that level, and then you would have been fine. Yeah, well, that's not really how a game should work, is it?
I mean, but MMOs keep making this mistake. Is Age of Conan had it so that you, as you progress and you got kind of level 20 or 30, the quest just dried up, and all you're left to do is just bang your heads together.
Yeah.
It's almost as if they released the game before it should have been out.
Well, maybe. That may well be. But heading back to kind of World of Warcraft, one of the cool things... I saw, which I'm still kind of slightly flabbergasted about, is the zone in the game called Ashara, which is just slightly north of Orgrimmar, which is like the Orc capital city, and it's pretty much the most tedious place in gaming. I'm kind of quite open about how boring
I've played running the Feed expansion packs.
And all it is just a kind of like autumnal forest that's got a massive hole kind of down the right hand side with a temple at the bottom, and if you fall off the cliff that down to the hole, you're screwed. You'll just have to half back to Orgrimmar. And it's the example they showed of how they intend to reshape WoW. And what they've done is they've just nuked the entire place from orbit. It's kind of their words. And rather than just kind of like reshape the cliff and kind of change the way the forest work, is they've turned it into a giant horde symbol. Only visible from space.
So all those characters are get to space, but hang on.
Yeah, so once you've got a flying mount, you can kind of see that the kind of goblins have made this into a kind of giant horde symbol. In the centre of it, there's an enormous kind of goblin capital city with a giant kind of motorised gun at the top. There's got like a little goblin at the kind of base of it, just kind of firing. It's like the Death Star in Fantasyland, but at the kind of centre of a horde. It's an amazing thing.
Guns in World of Warcraft is weird. I don't understand the technology and stuff like that.
It's the best thing about it. They can, that's what I love about WoW, though, is that they can slow anything at that game because it's, you know, there is essentially no...
Steampunk is the perfect excuse.
Yeah.
So that area, I seem to remember being in some sort of forest area that was quite purplish. Is that the one you're talking about?
That's a different area. You're probably thinking of like a starting area.
I don't know. It's because one of the few times I actually enjoyed World of Warcraft is when I met up with a couple of, I think it was Tom and John Walker, and we just ran through it exploring without doing anything apart from, you know, we just tried to dodge things. So I wouldn't like that to be destroyed because it was quite pretty.
Well, that is definitely going to get hit.
Oh.
Raging lava world.
What I'm hoping, though, is that all those guys who didn't stick with WoW will just come back to it to kind of see what the changes are, and they'll be able to see that with the free trial or whatever. Because the cool thing about it is that 0-60 experience is still the same, you know, still available if you don't buy the expansion. So if you just kind of came back and they've got like an offer for a Scroll of Resurrection or something, where you can invite an old player back in, you'll be able to play it free for 2 weeks and see all this cool new stuff. And I think that kind of bit of game tourism might be the hook that kind of puts WoW on even further stratospheric.
I've often argued that MMO should have a tourist class.
Yeah.
You know, an actual proper little guy with a camera or something.
Well, you know. If you want, we'll go back and you can sit in my motorbike in my little sidecar and I'll drive you around.
And in the game.
Yeah. did you guys talk about BattleNet last time?
A little bit.
Yeah. I'm really excited about that. I'm so excited about social.
So all the big stuff coming to BattleNet. You're not going to play StarCraft.
No.
You're not really going to play WoW, are you?
Well, what's going to happen is I'll play them all for a week each.
Yeah.
Okay. But I'll enjoy the social aspect of it all.
You'll just enjoy seeing me playing WoW and being able to message me in it.
Yeah, totally. It's awesome. In fact, if they just have a client, I'll just put that on my desktop and then all the games.
The non-gaming battle.
But the thing is, you won't be able to do that, though, because they're not going to do a client.
They'll eventually snap and do one.
If you want to see me playing WoW, you'll have to load up StarCraft or vice versa.
Or hack into your webcam.
That, well, yeah, you do that anyway.
But Activision will just go, okay, we need a client. Activision will find a way to get that to talk to Windows, to talk to Xbox Live or something. You know?
I asked them about whether they license it out, and they were kind of quite edgy about it. I don't think they really want to say yes at all. And I think, you know, the reason Battle.net will work is because it's so heavily embedded into those games.
Yeah.
And I think, the internet theory is that eventually it'll find its way into Call of Duty. I just don't really agree with that.
I don't really agree with Call of Duty, to be honest.
Hey, apparently Call of Duty 2 has throwing knives in it.
Actually, I changed my mind now. Yeah.
That's all I need.
Yeah, it does. There was a big multiplayer event last night.
And silent shotguns.
Yeah, which doesn't make any sense. Did you ever play SWAT 4?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that had beanbag shotguns in it.
Yeah,
those were weird. Yeah, we all shot each other in the face with them.
Just pain guns.
Actually, I'll, the taser.
I'm going to make you hurt now.
The taser in SWAT 4 was awesome.
Did you play it multiplayer, or did you play the co-op stuff?
We all played it co-op in the office, remember? Yeah. We kept on just turning at each other and going, shooting each other in the face and going, sorry, my bad.
Civilians. Yeah. Co-op torturing civilians.
What a game.
You spray him, I'll taser him.
That's pretty much all I'm going to say about WoW, really, because I want everyone to read the cover story, and I don't want to spoil too much about it, because I know a bunch of guys, and I've got a bunch of friends who play WoW, and pretty much the story in the mag, I'm super excited for them to read and be kind of have the same excitement that I do.
You should have a WoW wedding.
I can't have a WoW wedding.
Have a WoW cake or something. Just I'll do one thing, and then just like...
So I'm getting married soon, and Craig wants a WoW wedding.
I don't want a WoW wedding, but I'll
tell you what. We could get a replica of the motorbike and sidecar, so we could kind of drive into it.
I'm telling you, just have the cake. Instead of like, it's a white one, I'm getting a white one, just have it like the shape of whatever, Orgrimmar or something.
That'd be good.
And then don't let anyone cut it.
Yeah.
Just, no, don't, you're not fucking eating this cake.
Unfortunately, my fiancée has already ordered the cake, and she's ordered wedding favours as well, and they are in the shape of cats.
I tried.
Cats are quite good as well, though. You like cats,
Craig. I like cats. Cats are awesome.
There you go.
Shall we talk about something else in the mag?
Yeah.
Mods.
Mods. Yeah, there's a feature about mods.
Yeah, so we've picked our favourite 50 mods. The original kind of idea for the feature was essential mods, but it kind of turned to a bit more than that, really, didn't it?
Yeah. It's... mods we like. If we tell you that they're the 50 best mods ever made, then you'll take issue with various things that, you know, have huge fan bases and that people adore and stuff, but that for various reasons, you know, we weren't, if they're not things that we've absolutely loved, then we're not going to write about them passionately, and so we don't do you much service by trying to cover everything you've ever played or liked or has ever been any good. So instead, they're just a kind of a quite pared down section of 50 ones that are all just brilliant through and through, and divided into categories. So there's top 10 of just pure single player mods that are really kind of substantial things to play through and have loads of fun with. There's a whole set of like sort of tweaking and rebalancing ones that just take a good game and make it even better. There's a whole set of just of Source mods and one of just of Unreal mods, because those two engines have such huge communities devoted to them. And then there's just incredible classic mods, like ones that went on to completely change gaming or spawn a whole huge series of successful games and like Capture the Flag.
I think my favourite thing about the feature is it's a really kind of good looking feature as well. Is that I've got this kind of, I've always had this feeling that mods are always kind of quite scrappy and difficult, but they can produce images easily as good as the games. You just have to kind of work at it. Yeah. And I think kind of giving them the space to look quite stylish and exciting is really nice.
Is it hidden in there?
Yep.
Awesome. That's all I care about.
Yeah, going back to this, you're struck A by the huge variety of stuff that's out there. You know, they're more diverse than commercial games because they can just be made. You know, any idea that someone has, they can turn it into something you can actually play. But also, there's just so many like old favourites I've forgotten about. Like, I've forgotten about SMOD, or S-MOD, for Half-Life 2, which is not a proper like total conversion or anything. It just adds loads of weapons to Half-Life 2, and also a few other weird features like different versions of enemies and stuff. And it's just some... I think it's a Japanese guy who's just gone completely insane. Obviously a brilliant coder, and it's just put loads and loads of shit in the game. So everything from like a World War II grease gun to banana bombs, which is just an actual bunch of bananas that you drop and then explode as a cluster bomb.
You've got a PSP.
I think my favourite thing in it is just the spade. Primary fire on the spade, just like it hits them with it, but it's almost more like a slap. Yeah. It's kind of, it does a slapping motion, like back and forth, but holding a spade. It goes bang, 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 bang.
I like the kick because it's so powerful. It's just you can sit in the car and drive the car by kicking.
It's brilliant physics. If you kick the dashboard, obviously the dashboard goes forward. Yeah. So you're in the car, it drags you forward. It makes perfect sense.
It's like a turbo.
Works in real cars. Just try it sometime. Yeah, there's stuff like that that we played ages and ages ago and forgot about. And also there's a bunch of new stuff for the Unreal games that I hadn't seen. I was really into Unreal mods back when they did the original big contest where they gave away an Unreal engine license to the winner. Of course, Red Orchestra won that, and that's how that company got off the ground. And they're the ones who published Killing Floor more recently. But yeah, for Unreal Tournament 3, there's one called The Haunted, which is a zombie survival mod, much like Killing Floor and to a lesser extent Left 4 Dead, but just absolutely gorgeous looking, like beautifully beautifully made models and amazing lighting effects and gorgeously made levels. And it's third person, kind of over the shoulder thing. And you find various weapons as you go along, just blasting different types of zombies, increasingly horrible types of zombies. So they get more kind of Hellraiser as they go along. And then each map has a moment where, like, there's a desert one, kind of bright midday sun at some gas station. Halfway through, it just goes nearly black, and there's this, like, howling wind, and then zombies just come in massive, massive hordes, and, like, you start to find better weapons at that point as well, but it's just absolutely terrifying. Awesome. And the other level's like a medieval castle, and halfway through that, it just swamps with fog, so you can't even see your hand in front of you.
Isn't there a mod that kind of makes you blind as well?
It's the Blind Monk Society.
Yeah.
That's a source mod.
That's brilliant. That's really fantastic.
So
this is a mod with no graphics whatsoever, just a completely black screen.
You can still move WASD. You have to just listen to where you're going, and the guy says, okay, keep the tolling bell to the left. But it's brilliantly acted as well. I mean, they've got a proper actor and this really sort of elderly, congenial uncle type talking you through the game. It's brilliant.
Because John Carmack said kind of about a year ago that he thought mods were on their way out, pretty much, because they need so much time and development space to produce.
Well, if you make a stupidly expansive one, then yeah. But, you know, I mean, that's the thing that Gary from Gary's Mods always saying, you know, you shouldn't start off by trying to make an entire other game, you know. Try and just tweak things, try and make, you know, feel your way through before you do it. You know, the hidden isn't that much of a change from Half-Life and whatever, but they got that out really quickly and they made an amazing game from it, you know, so. So fuck him.
And it's amazing how much ambitious stuff does actually get finished and get made. I mean, there's one called Planet Storm for Unreal 3, which isn't finished, but it's already working with two levels. And one level is just basically a kind of futuristic vehicular battlefield-type game, like Battlefield 2142. And then the other level, there's no ground at all. You're in space. And instead of picking a class, you choose a ship to spawn on. And there's like these five capital ships on each side, just in this huge, epic like space war, just blasting each other with these gigantic cannons and stuff. And you spawn on board one of these, and you walk around the interior of it. You can like walk to a turret post and man one of the guns to shoot people. You walk up to the bridge and actually steer that ship and go somewhere else in the battle. Or you can walk down to the docking bay and get in a fighter and then just launch out into space.
Basically,
you can like get aboard other people's ships and, you know, raid them and like actually go inside them and kill the other crew. Yeah,
so we get planet on the server.
Can do, yeah.
That sounds actually brilliant.
Battlefield 1942, you could do that as well. They took out the control of the actual...
There was a Star Wars mod that allowed you to do that, I think.
Yeah. I just love the fact in Battlefield...
Strike something.
Yeah. Just love the fact in 1942, you just get in a big fucking aircraft car and drive it really slowly.
One of the maps in the original 1942 had submarines in it as well.
Yeah.
Which is just like the slowest, most tedious kind of thing to do in the game.
You do
but
that
still
stuff,
brilliant.
Yeah, they need to do that, more of that stuff.
So, Tom, what's your favourite mod in the future?
Actually, Action Quake 2, which is in the classic section. And in writing about that, I discovered that it's a bit of a pain to play last time I did, because you've got to get the original files, and it comes in like three different installers, and then you need all the map packs, and then someone else released a better version of sort of a mod for Action Quake 2 that all my friends play, but I don't know that shit. And in writing this, I looked it up and discovered that someone's made a standalone version, because the Quake 2 engine is open source, so you can make it whatever you like with it. And so someone's just taken the Action Quake 2 stuff, integrated it with the Quake 2 source code, and released it as a standalone executable, which downloads like 150 meg. And it's called... Let me just check. I think it's called Axiom. Oh, Axion. A-X-I-O-N.
Awesome. Greg?
The Hidden.
Hidden.
Yeah.
So that was that made by some PC gamer community guys?
Or, I don't know. I think the guy came on the community because of it, but he's hung around.
Therefore, we own it.
Yeah.
Yes, it is ours.
I didn't get right any of this feature, so okay. But I do love the hidden. It's a great game.
Graham?
I'm going to go for Portal Prelude. I could pick half the mods in this feature. For Portal Prelude's a single-player mod, which is a prequel to Portal, where you're one of the test subjects before GLaDOS is created. So you're going through a whole different bunch of puzzles, and the people who are guiding you through are actually human scientists that are still working there. And you get to explore the background of Aperture Science and meet the people who are making GLaDOS and see the creation of GLaDOS and what went wrong. And it's obviously they're just making up their own kind of backstory to the game, but it works so brilliantly.
That's awesome. I'm going to stick with Alien Swarm. It's because I think I had so many great memories of playing that at university. Yeah. I can't believe it still exists and it's still going. And it's brilliant. So, just if you wanted a great month's worth of gaming, pick up Mag. So hooray! Ready for mods. I've lost my notepad of what's next. You want to bitch about Champions? Have you fully bitched about Champions?
Yeah, I think I'm all bitched out.
As they say. Is there anything good about Champions?
It's enjoyable. I've got a character with some laser eyeballs, for fuck's sake. You know, it's that kind of thing's cool. The one thing I didn't like was how uninspired people were when they were making their characters. When I ran through it, I click on someone and say, "I see this awesome costume or whatever," and then right click to see what the bio is. There's just nothing in there. Make some effort, you know.
So, what's your character?
Bird Strike. I think it's Bird Strike. It's a term of when a plane flies through some flock of birds, basically. Yeah. So, yeah.
So, your character flew through a flock of birds?
No, my character was a pigeon that flew through an evil scientist jet and then turned into some sort of woman.
Right.
And there's also a hairpiece.
That doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, I know. At least I wrote something. And his hairpiece, who's a hairdresser.
Okay.
out for peace.
Brilliant.
But no one else was doing that, so.
One of my favourite superhero, or supervillain actually it was, that I saw made by a player was someone in the guild that I was in City of Villains, who made an undead mastermind class one, which is where your minions are zombies, and dressed him as a really kind of old-fashioned classy magician in a top hat and like a tuxedo and called him Abracadabra.
Yeah, awesome. Need more of that stuff. It allows you to do that kind of stuff, you know, which is great. And the actual developing your character is interesting because, you know, you don't just sit there and go, I'll go be this. You just choose whatever the fuck you want, you know.
Yeah.
So Tom had like a bunch of robots. Just, you know, every time I saw him, he was surrounded by these tiny little robots that are doing all his bidding. It's just like,
robots
them?
Turn into turrets, which is awesome.
Yeah.
You just hit a key and they just turn into like a big mounted guns where they stand, and then you kind of go off and bait enemies into them, basically.
Awesome.
So I re-rolled a character to copy him, basically.
It's got a blocking system where you take much less damage and are immune to certain special attacks when you're holding down block. And you even gain energy when people attack you with a special attack. But the trouble is, if you're a pet class, there's no reason not to use it. Like, I just use like one quick blast to get some energy because I have a power that recharges my endurance rather than drains it. And then just hold down block and let my turrets kill everything. It's like not the most dynamic combat style. Don't hurt me!
Have you been playing Champions, Grim?
No, I haven't actually.
Why not?
Because no one seems that keen on it. So I was going to start playing it and then everyone was...
I mean, the world's okay. Really generic. They've got an island there called Monster Island. For
Monster Island is actually a peninsula.
Yeah.
Monster Island seems like that's the coolest thing anyone's told me about it. If it's the choice between desert, yeah. Canada, or Monster Island.
But you don't get to there until level 30, is it?
Yeah, it's pretty late game.
Oh, God.
You know, and that's, you know, you don't get to create your own nemesis until level 25, and even then you don't actually have that much control over it, you know. But I had fun for the weekend, I played it, you know. Just not playing it beyond that at the moment.
I'm too busy playing Batman.
Batman?
Na-na-na-na-na-na.
Which is also a superhero game, so, you know.
There's a segue.
Yeah.
Pow.
I think we already talked about Batman, though, didn't we, Les?
Yeah, but if you've got anything to say.
Not really. I quite like it.
You hit the boss valves.
I find I often have difficulty with stealth games because I don't like the tension that's associated with being so vulnerable that I'm, you know, walking around in the shadows, and if I put a toe out, then alarms start going off and I get immediately killed and I have to start over again. But I like Batman because it's not like that. It's more like a hunting game than a stealth game,
yeah,
where I'm up in the shadows, but I'm the one that's they're scared of.
Yeah. But it's interesting because it's the biggest difference between Batman and other stealth games to me is that in all stealth games, you are kind of vulnerable. Like if you're out in the open in Batman, then you know their AK-47s will rip you to shreds in a matter of seconds. And it's not like Hitman where you can just run up to every guard if you want to do and, you know, do whatever you like to them. But you are powerful in Batman, whereas like in Splinter Cell and Thief, if you're directly behind them under the right circumstances with the right weapon, then you can knock them out in one quick blow. But in Batman, it's just, it's seamlessly merged with the combat system, which is really good, and in which you are absolutely devastatingly powerful.
Yeah.
So if when anything goes wrong in Batman, you have to improvise, and you know, suddenly you realize you're face to face with a guard. You've got so much you can do to them, and you can just completely smash them to pieces in combat.
Has Batman changed your impressions of what you think the next Splinter Cell should be?
I wouldn't necessarily expect Splinter Cell to have such a, you know, extensive melee combat thing, which is what makes Batman so satisfying. And sometimes in Batman, like when you've got one guy left, the situation's pretty much sold. You know, it's so easy to take down one guy. Mm. But instead of doing like a stealthy takedown or a one hit thing, I'll just walk up to him and just punch him repeatedly just because the combat system is that much fun. I wouldn't expect that in a Splinter Cell game, but I do want this thing where you can do like a knockout in Splinter Cell Chaos Theory and Double Agent and all that stuff, but it kind of, it's an animation and you sort of, you press the button, you're locked in place, the other person's locked in place, you do the punch thing.
You do that kind of slidey thing where you align yourself.
Or more commonly, if you're not in exactly the right position, it just doesn't work and they don't take any damage and then they kill you. And what I love about Batman is it's just so fluid. If there's any, you know, if you press attack, he's going to hit somebody. It doesn't really matter where you, both of you are.
It's weird. Like the original version of Splinter Cell Conviction seemed to be going in the direction of just grabbing things and hitting people with them, you know, which I was totally excited about. And then when they showed the new version, which I'm totally, totally excited about. But then I went and looked back at the old video, and the old video looks really, really rubbish now compared to the new version. So
that's true.
It's that thing that people talk about when they talk about Crysis and Far Cry of being standing on the edge of a village and watching where other people are and planning out your assault, which I don't really get that much from Far Cry 2, but I get from Batman all the time because I'm literally floating above them.
Yeah.
Well, not literally floating.
Yeah, you have a sort of a godlike perspective on the situation. You can see through walls, you're up above them, and you're completely invisible all the time.
That's how I play the spy in TF2 now, actually, with a
no clip on.
But it's weird how many people don't realize that you know, if you're invisible and on top of something that people don't really take into account, like a pile of tubes or something, you just, you could be sat there for the entire game just watching people go by.
That is actually quite sinister.
It's what I do, you know. It turned me into Batman. That's what I said. You know, you turned into this sort of cloaked thing that just no one knows what's going to happen at any point. You know,
this is why I'm looking forward to AVP. Because I haven't been impressed by the Marine or the Predator stuff, but the alien stuff is just you walking around on the ceiling, knocking out lights. You've got pheromone vision, which lets you see enemies through walls. And then it's just patrolling guards and the one person that you have to face hug. So you just, you know, you're crawling around, taking out everyone and then face hugging the last person. Yeah. Alien is Batman.
Is there, in Aliens, a multiplayer mode which kind of puts you against all of them and it's just a free-for-all?
There's a co-op mod with up to four players, I can't remember what it's called, where it's you and three other Marines just fighting an onslaught of aliens. That's which cool. Sounds really cool.
But can you play like Predator versus aliens? Or
I don't know, they didn't talk about that.
It does kind of seem like the Predator would have to come out on top in that situation. Like with humans, it's a whole fucking army versus the Predator, and with aliens, it's a whole fucking army of aliens versus a few Marines.
He's packing his own nuke. So who's going to win? You saw Alien VP at Gamescom, didn't you?
Yeah.
Alien VP sounds great. The Alien Vice President.
You also saw Mafia at Gamescom.
Yeah.
And you've come back basically just gibbering about it.
I'm a huge fan of the original Mafia, and The original Mafia was, you know, it's an open world like Grand Theft Auto, but it's far more directed than Grand Theft Auto's story is, so it's much more story-based. It's essentially, it's Half-Life in an open world, is that kind of thing. And Mafia 2 is doing the same thing, and it just looks incredible. So the presentation that they showed us was just essentially a day with Vito, the main character, starting off in his apartment with his prostitutes, going to the fridge, getting a beer, going to the wardrobe, getting his clothes on, getting a phone call.
Is that cutscene or is that you wandering around?
That's you wandering around. And then you head out into the world and, you know, you pass all these scripted events. So you're walking down the stairs and there's a woman there scrubbing the floor and stuff like that.
Push it over.
I don't know if you can, but no. I'm sure you can. And then, like, things like, doesn't have a day and night cycle. They're controlling that based on what mood they want to create. It doesn't have dynamic weather or anything. It's the same with that. So different seasons as you progress over 10 years of his life. The side missions aren't just some little blip on your map or whatever that you can go to or not. It's actually someone who will stop you in the street or you'll drive past and you can stop and get involved with this conflict that's going on or whatever. And so it's so polished in a way that I wasn't expecting from this company, which kind of disappeared after the original Mafia. I think they did some slightly rubbish Vietnam games and Hidden and Dangerous, which was mostly broken. And yet, you know, and they haven't done, I don't think they've released the game in like 5 years.
Well, so one thing though, that company knows how to do atmosphere.
Mm. Yeah.
Did you ever play the original Hidden and Dangerous?
I played them both, yeah. They're both great.
The first level in Hidden and Dangerous is just incredible.
And an incredibly libelous story about that game that I'm not going to repeat. It's the most astonishing thing I've ever heard, actually.
Really?
Yeah, it's really
shocking. Can you tell me afterwards?
Yes, I can.
Okay, cool. Excellent. But are they, you know, they know how to kind of layer on the weather and the kind of pounding rain and, you know, just incidental dialogue.
It's things like when exciting stuff is happening and you're in a car, then they've got an AI thing that recognises that, and the music on the radio, although there's like three radio stations like in Grand Theft Auto, the radio that the DJ will start to play will be exciting upbeat music because exciting things are happening.
DJ.
They've thought through so much of the stuff.
It's the idea that like the actual driver will be thinking about what most appropriate station to be in.
I don't know, it's just like an omniscient DJ who can see everything that you're doing and is tailoring the music just to you.
I saw an action sequence video that they had, which was really interesting because at one point the guy hid behind some boxes and the gunfire was actually moving the individual boxes in the pile, which I thought was kind of cool. And it was chipping out walls as well.
You're just a nerd for physics, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do have a tattoo in my bum that just says physics.
The next slam at the end.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, what else can you tell us about Mafia? Well, anything.
I've heard they're involved with organised crime.
Yeah.
It's the police are working in much a similar way to the first game, because in Grand Theft Auto 4 you can run red lights, you can speed, police don't really care. They'll go, whoop, with our little police cars.
Yeah, I really like that.
Really like that noise.
Hey, but, less of that.
But the police in Mafia 1 were always more strict. If you ran a red light, if you sped or whatever, they would try and pull you over and give you a ticket. And so there's a bit in the demonstration they showed us where you come out of an apartment and some guys try to mug you, and that's one of these dynamic events that they have that are scripted throughout. And so you pull out the gun that you've just got and they get scared and run off. But then a police officer sees you and says, hey, you better have a permit for that gun. And then you've got three options. You can either give them the permit.
Apply for a permit.
Which you don't have at that time. You can try and bribe them, which might just get you in more trouble. It might work. Or you can run off. And so you run off and the police doesn't start shooting at you because you haven't actually committed that bad a crime. Yeah. So he starts blowing his little whistle and radios chasing after you and radios in, and then other police will look for you and you can go into a clothes shop to buy new suits or whatever. To
buy a fake stick on beard.
Yeah, that would be great if you could. Yeah. Settling.
Just a giant moustache.
The kind of level of detail in this just sounds insane.
Yeah, there is an insane amount of detail. And it's like it covers 10 years of Vito's life. So it starts off in, I think it's the late 40s. I think it's 40s and 50s. But as you go through, then the world will change and the seasons will change and the cars will change. And so they're putting so much detail into it.
And your voice will drop.
Yeah.
My problem with running into the police in Mafia is that my instinct when confronted with authority in a situation where I'm in the wrong is to kill.
Yeah.
And often that wasn't a viable option when I'd only been caught for speeding.
Everyone has to die now! Just... Like, Tom is handy to have around in the office.
Publisher's coming.
I have to say, I didn't enjoy the first Mafia. This one intrigues me a lot more, though.
Why didn't you enjoy the first one?
All I can remember is hating the driving physics.
The cars were slow, quite slow to start off with in the original game. It was the 1920s or whatever, so the cars were a bit rubbish. But this is now the 50s, mostly.
Everything can go at 40 miles an hour.
So it's, you know, it's getting into kind of hot rod territory and that kind of thing, or so forth.
There's a glitch in Mafia for me where the polygons in one man's head in the cutscene were randomised so that he was a horrible mess of like spikes of flesh and nasty like jaggedy bits.
I mean, I am basically the anti-endgame story guy anyway, so I just don't care what's going on. Just
this is
going to
have a
things.
Lot of story and cutscenes and dialogue and stuff like that.
I think, Craig, you may hate Mafia.
I tried playing Hell's Highway.
Yeah, Brothers in Arms.
And there's no skip button in that at all, as far as I can tell. 10 minutes. Oh, sub Brothers in Arms shite. The opening, I just stopped playing.
Sub Brothers in Arms shite. Sub Band of Brothers shite, you mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'll tell you what, though, I got to that bit in. You know, we were talking ages and ages ago about
the Supernatural Corridor.
The Supernatural Corridor in Brothers in Arms. I got to that, and yeah, it's a random Supernatural Corridor.
I wanted to get there.
Ghosts
were
one of the fighters in World War II.
I wanted to get there, but I was just hitting E, escape, every other button I could think of, and enter, nothing happens. I just stopped playing, put in TF2.
Brothers in Arms is a weird one, because they're just so committed to their characters and the storyline.
That's never going to continue, though, now, is it?
The third one sold quite well. It just didn't meet the publisher's expectations.
One of the interesting things in the third one was there's no multiplayer at all, which was based on, but in the controls.
There is
I don't think so.
Is there? No, there's not.
No,
there was supposed to be co-op stuff, but you know. But in the controls, is like drop the flag, talk to team, and stuff like that.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, the co-op stuff was cut
there's,
out.
There's achievements
at the last minute.
For multi. There's not co-op multiplayer, but there is achievement. I know there's achievements.
I'll double check. I'm sure I didn't see anything that said other than continue tedious storyline in the option menu.
I remember being baffled by the idea that there's an achievement for playing a match a day for a year or something. Gearbox making Borderlands as well.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting looking though.
Have we had a chance to play it yet?
I played with the horrible controller pad thing, so I didn't get much of a feel to it. And also they did that thing which I hate, which is, okay, now we're going to level you up 20 levels and stick you in the level. It's just like there's no sense of what's happening. I enjoyed what happened, but I didn't know where I was, didn't know the controls, wasn't particularly playing with anyone I would have chosen to play with at the time, you know, it'd be us four basically.
Yeah.
You know, but it does have a very interesting sort of, like the character I had a shield with a turret, an automatic turret attached to it, so you could throw it out and have it, you know.
I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm really interested in it as well.
We should... This is kind of aside from the podcast. We should be getting four copies of Flashpoint in the next couple of days. So
yeah, Friday.
Shall we take a couple of hours to play through submissions together?
I'm up for that.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I'm up for not working.
Well, it's
kind of working,
work.
You know.
So we'll get immediately shot in the head by 3 miles away. And
it'll be brilliant. It'll lead us to our certain death. So we made a
and
promise to talk about how amazing marketing is at the start of the podcast.
You made that promise. Well, sat here back.
didn't really know what you were talking about.
We asked some readers what their favourite trailers were over Twitter.
Oh, for God's sake, Tim.
Before we move on to Twitter stuff, can I talk about Section 8?
Yeah, sure.
Section 8.
It's awesome. It's got the biggest gun I've ever seen in any game ever.
So Section 8
is that on the map?
Yeah, it's
tribes-like, team-based shooter.
It's not really tribes-like.
It's very Battlefield-like. There is a jetpack, but it's very limited. It's not really about jetting around. It's really just for kind of getting over low walls. Which have traditionally been game protagonist enemies. At last, low wall, we meet again. But this time, I have the upper hand. And that's how I play it.
It has custom classes, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, which the custom classes are really cool. The first time you play it, you kind of think, no, you're not going to let me do this, are you? I can have a sniper rifle and a rocket launcher.
Yeah.
I can have a sniper rifle and a shotgun. This is ridiculous. And it is, I must say, you do kind of end up, there's like six classes and you customize each of them. You do kind of end up picking one, customizing it, and then you pretty much ended up with the class you want and you don't want to play any others. Like,
right.
I have set up six individual different classes with different specialities and stuff. But the others are kind of not so good as the best one.
What is your class?
It's a machine gun, which is the big, you know, belt-fed 100-round clip.
So is that kind of thing you hold, like, for...
Yeah, the support, supporting weapon. And the reason I use that is that it's got this really weird system with shields and armor. So armor is what you're really trying to get down, because that's what kills people when they hit zero of it, whereas shields, you know, are the first thing that to go, and then they regenerate. But certain weapons within certain ranges will start just going through shields. A machine gun has really good shield penetration at, like, medium range. And then secondary weapon, I went for the shotgun at first, and it turns out to not be that great. And the pistol is fucking amazing, which is really cool, because, like, by default setup, like, the sniper gets the sniper rifle and the pistol as the default class, and you kind of think, oh, I don't want a shitty pistol, I'll take, like, one of the big guns as my secondary, since I can. And then you realise they've actually counterbalanced that by just making the pistol unbelievably good. So any kind of, like, short range, I mean, it takes kind of 3 or 4 hits to kill somebody. But in Section 8, that's a big deal, because in Section 8, everyone is super tough. It takes ages to kill people. Usually I hate that in games, but because they're, like, big, heavily armoured Space Marines, they're kind of, it seems convincing. But the thing that I love about Section 8 is that it's got dynamic missions, like Quake Wars tried to do and, like, Brink is going to do. And they're not super advanced, or they're not tailored to what class you're playing or where you are, or, you know, what's important to the overall strategy. There's just, after a little bit of bickering over the control points, like about 5-10 minutes, dynamic missions will start to pop up, and there'll be something like capture the intelligence, and a briefcase intelligence will appear in one of the enemy bases, and you've got to take it to one of your bases, or protect the VIP, and like a general just come down from space and crash land, and he'll just, controlled by the AI, just run across the battlefield. He's got to get to a certain capture point that you own. And you've got to protect it. But he's awesome doing that stuff, because instead of being a normal escort mission where you've got this weak idiot and you've got to do all the work, he's just this total badass. He's like 19 times as tough as anybody. He's got infinite ammo, just mows everyone down as soon as he sees them. So when you're with the general, you're defending him. Like, you are helping. You are putting more firepower on other people.
Save me,
general. It just means you win every encounter. It takes like 10 guys to take the two of you down. It's brilliant.
So these missions pop up separately from...
Just on the HUD.
So it's not just about kind of capture the base.
There'll be like 4 or 5 control points, and by the time the first dynamic mission pops up, all of them will be captured by either you or the enemy, and that goes on throughout the whole, right to the end of the game. You can just spend your whole time capturing control points if you like, and that's always worthwhile, because it's very rare to hold all the control points at once. They've kind of made it so that there's always one control point that's really vulnerable, and you can spawn anywhere on the map at any time. But if you capture a control point, it's got anti-air guns that will just shoot you as you come down. Right. And that kind of ties into the custom class thing as well, because you can add anti-air protective armor so that you take less damage from doing that, so you can make a class that's just about dropping in on well-guarded positions.
So when you spawn, you're not spawning as in just teleporting into the battlefield.
No, you drop from space.
You're basically a missile.
And you don't have a parachute, but you have kind of air brakes, and it's got this really cool system where there's just this giant bar down the side of your HUD when you're dropping in that goes down, and there's like the lower area shaded red and the area above that shaded orange, and when you're in orange, that's the time you've got to apply your air brakes, and when you're in red, it's kind of already too late. But at the same time, you want to drop as quickly as possible so that you get to the battlefield sooner.
Right.
If there are anti-air guns in range, then you take less damage if you drop quicker. So you're always waiting for the very last minute to deploy your air brakes, and even that's really good fun.
If you deploy the air brakes early enough, you can start controlling about where you're going to aim as well, whereas if you just go straight down,
you can actually kill people by landing on them.
Yeah, I've done that.
It's really fucking hard.
My favourite thing is the buy menu, because, you know, you're whatever money or whatever is you're fighting things, and you go, okay, I could have that in aircraft thing, I could have that, or I could have a giant fucking mecha suit.
Yeah. You do get these great moments where you're like, because, as I say, you're quite tough, and there's just standard pieces of equipment is a repair ray that you can use on yourself. You have loads of situations where you're taking lots of damage, you go into like this overdrive sprint mode where you shoot off or you use a jetpack to get over a wall or something, and you're safe again, and you can repair again. And I've had situations where I've been like deep in an enemy base, jetpacked over a wall to give myself time to recharge. I'm against like 6 enemies, there's no teammates anywhere to be seen. And suddenly I was like, hang on, I've got some points. I can actually just summon down a giant mecha suit. You just put down a little marker, you wait a couple of seconds, and this thing drops from space. And you just climb in, come back out. All right, motherfuckers.
Awesome.
Sadly, there's not that many servers playing it right now. We tried to get one on our multiplayer server, and we just couldn't do it. So it looks like it's going to be largely unsupported. And when I tried to play it, it was like 2 servers.
I was speaking to Steve about this multiplayer. And he was saying just they really, really, really want to support it, but because they haven't been given the kind of dedicated server support they need, it's just a nightmare to kind of get a community around it. Mm. It just seems like such a basic mistake.
We've even got like a bunch of people who want to play it, you know, and they've formed their own little Steam group, but they're just not, they're, you know, there's no way of, there's not going to be a big game, basically, you know.
Yeah.
Well, luckily, the bots are really good, unlike Battlefield, where, you know, bot matches are just kind of just target practice. They're just dummies. You blunder around doing nothing. Bots in Section 8 seem really good. There's the only times I've been pissed off with them are when I jetpack through the air to avoid their fire and they trace me perfectly. But that is kind of excusable because there's a feature in the game where you can lock on to someone when you're looking down the scope. So if you want to be all about tactics and you're not that great at aiming, you can actually set up a class that just boosts that lock-on ability so that you have it ready straight away, lasts for like 20 seconds or whatever, and then anytime you're looking at your scope, you can just, you know, basically auto-aim and just train your guns on people really easily.
Have you had good games where it feels like the team who has thought, who has basically kind of figured out tactics and worked together the best and won, or is it... because all these missions are going on, it's a bit of a free-for-all? And
I've only played online very briefly, and both times, just like three matches, and both of the matches that I won, I felt really fucking hard. There was no overall plan, because the problem with it is, if you're playing offline against medium-level bots, you're much better than any given medium-level bot, like even if you're quite an average player. So you can take on like three or four guys, as long as they come one at a time. And it means that when you get those dynamic missions, you can do them. Like if general comes down, you can protect the general if you decide to dedicate your, you know, your whole time to that. Or you can capture the intel if you really try and you think about it. Whereas online, because every single person is as good as you at least, like most of them are better than me, or they've just found some cool gun, or I don't know, they've specced their person more intelligently than I have. I can't do any objective. There's no one objective that I can do on my own, and I can't really persuade anyone else to join me or, you know, work well as a squad. So I much prefer just playing against the bots because you can actually achieve something.
Yeah. Sounds good. Shall we get questions from Twitter?
Yep.
Great.
Do you want normal questions or the answers to the trailer question?
Shall we do the answer to the trailer question and then we'll figure out what our favourite trailers are?
Yeah. This is just a random question because it came up on Reddit. A bunch of people talking about their favourite trailers all the time. Someone's just the Morrowind one, which... I have seen, but it was years and years and years ago. And watching that again, it's really funny because it's like just kind of corridors and like empty fields and just stuff that when it's graphically impressive, it must have been like, wow, look at the graphics. But these days when it's not graphically impressive, you're like, why are you showing this? What's that? That's just some water. But it does have the music, and the music just gets me every time. Just so kind of exciting and fantasy and cool. My favorite trailer, I think, is... the Supreme Commander one from E3 2006, where it's just giant spiders stomping over everything, and it zooms out, and you see the whole fucking map is just absolutely vast.
And there's, like, there's loads of kind of transports coming in, and they've all got bots on the side, and they're kind of firing.
Battleships and destroyers crawling onto Earth, and all that stuff does happen in the game. And actually, if you get a proper epic size Supreme Commander match against really hard AIs, and you play against like 10 of them, then you do end up with a couple of battles that look like that. But for the most part, like certainly the single player campaign was not like that at all.
It wasn't a trailer, but I remember one E3 downloading all the Half-Life 2 shaky cam stuff when they announced it.
I did that as well,
Over a 56k modem, and it took most of a day, but it was worth it for those kind of that 10 minutes of footage.
Mm. Yeah. See, I loved the first Portal trailer.
Yeah, Ian Dawson suggested that one.
I was in the audience when they debuted, you know.
Really?
Yeah. And I was the one that told everyone it was an Arbacula drop, and we didn't have a website at the time, so everyone got that scoop but me.
Could have worked great.
Assholes.
There was an old Tribes 2 trailer when that just came out, which was essentially, in my head it was probably like 5 minutes long, and it was just the story of one team going to capture the other team's flag. But it portrayed so perfectly all the different classes, all the vehicles, all this team working together to have this kind of dramatic trip into enemy territory and leaving the Shrike just at the last second for the guy with the flag to fly into and rocket off and chasing and stuff like that. And, you know, based on that trailer, I bought the game with essentially no other information. And it did. The game does have moments like that when you were working together as a team, where you had that.
Did you ever get to play Tribes online properly?
Yeah, I was in a clan for a little while in Tribes 2, and you know, if we got the orchestration between us all and the cooperation right, it was a fantastic experience.
Do you remember the original MechWarrior 2 one?
I remember the
Artos 9 suggesters.
I remember the intro to MechWarrior 2. I don't know if it was a trailer.
It might have been the trailer as well.
It was a bit mind-blowing at the time because it was entirely CGI and it was a kind of duel between, I think it was a Timberwolf and something else. It was just extraordinary.
Awesome. All memories of MechWarrior 2 are things that, if I played them today, would be absolute shit, but at the time seemed amazing. I just remember like being dropped in like this blasted red Mars-like landscape where you couldn't see anything because it was horrible,
it was
like fog.
Bright red and
dry. It was just completely pizzas. I remember being like so fucking excited. Look at this crazy place. I've never been anywhere like this.
I remember coming to MechWarrior off the back of TIE Fighter, and the intro. For some reason, I just bought it without knowing anything about it, and just assuming it was a bit like kind of TIE Fighter. And the intro kind of set me up for this. Holy shit, can my PC really do this?
No.
Can play the video.
Yeah, it can play the video.
Do you remember the first Halo trailer from E3 in 1989? Before Bungie were bought by Microsoft and it was going to be a PC and Mac game. And they released this 9-minute trailer, which was Master Chief coming down and with help of from a bunch of the soldiers on the ring. It was like a big segment of them and the Warthog riding around and the physics of them being jostled around in the Warthog and weird aliens and nature. It was going to be this huge open world thing, almost stalkerish with this environmental creatures that would just roll the land and stuff like that. That was so cool before Microsoft bought it and it just became a first person shooter.
I remember that trailer actually because Master Chief only came in at the end, didn't he?
Most of the time
he was just kind of following
the soldiers. Yeah.
Someone says the trailer for the Thief Dark Project was gorgeous and creepy. I remember it.
Maybe it's based around the in-game cinematic because those were always the best I've ever seen.
And Snark and Fury suggested the Dawn of War 2 one, which was awesome.
Yeah, that was good.
That was with the Eldar running at the Dreadnought picking one up and then like spinning it around and then flaming it with the flamer.
We haven't talked about Chaos Rising.
No.
We just announced Chaos Rising.
There's a thing called Chaos Rising.
Yeah, complete afterthought. Next expansion to Dawn of War 2, it's called Chaos Rising. You'll read about it first in PC Gamer. I'm just not going to say anything else. That's how fucking cool we are.
Yep. You might be able to guess which faction features prominently, though, from the title.
The Rising.
It's the Rising. I assumed we couldn't talk about that because you hadn't mentioned it.
No, it just completely slipped my mind.
Hooray.
Well, we're on Twitter now. We can't go back.
Yep. When's this podcast going out?
It'll be the day subscription go out, so tomorrow. If we get it back for us.
That'll confuse our listeners now. It's coming out tomorrow, but I'm listening to it now.
Okay,
continue more stuff. Twitter.
Okay, general Twitter questions now.
General Twitter?
Yep.
He's awesome.
Admiral Vague. Is there any truth to the rumour that post-patch all non-bald avatars will be nerfed in World of Warcraft? Asks Uppy17, who has presumably caught on to the secret identity of the person we totally failed to conceal the identity of last podcast.
So maybe former PC gamer
Hirsute
man with less little hair might work for a different.
Oh, that guy we sacked for drinking on the job. Oh yeah,
that one.
That was embarrassing.
So yeah, basically anyone who's bald in World of Warcraft is getting a significant buff.
Wonko33 wants to know what major gaming studios are based in England.
Creative Assembly, Splash
Rocksteady,
Damage,
Splash Damage,
Lionhead, Rockstar,
Zombie Cow,
Gary.
Yeah, Gary. He's in Newcastle.
Major juggernauts.
Codemasters.
Yeah, I was really surprised to find out that Batman Arkham Asylum was British. I don't know why. It just kind of seems American.
Yeah,
there's so much muscle in it.
Yeah. It's so actiony, isn't it?
UK game developers are getting kind of really concerned about government not giving the kind of tax breaks that other countries are getting to get game developers.
You should all move to Canada.
Well, yeah, you should move to Canada.
Did we mention Lionhead?
Yep. Lionhead.
They've been bought by Microsoft. They don't count anymore.
PC developers anymore, are they?
Yeah, it's really the fucking Fable 2 that came out, did it? The PC.
It was meant to be.
Mm.
I remember having a conversation about it.
They did. They announced it for the PC.
Yeah, they did, didn't they?
It's one of those games where, like, it's coming to the PC. Everyone assumes it's coming to the PC, and then because the delays between console and PC are so long, people just forget that it was ever going to be coming.
But, I mean, if look at Halo 1, Halo 2 being on the PC. I mean, it's not, you know, you could release Halo 3 for the PC just for the people who have played Halo 1, Halo 2 on the PC just to finish it off, for God's sakes, you know.
I guess they. I mean, that's the mad thing, isn't it? That you can. You know, if you booted up Halo on the PC now, the original Halo, you'd still find a load of servers.
Yeah. I played Halo multiplayer.
We used to play it in the office all the time, didn't we?
I installed it about 4 months ago, and there's still people playing it. It's so hacked. It's ridiculous right now, but it's still people doing it, you know?
I remember just griefing people with you constantly.
I don't grief people.
Dark Renown wants to know why Champions with 100 people per shard and no persistence across shards, I think he's wrong about that, is an MMO, and APB with 100 people per shard and persistence is not an MMO.
They're both MMOs.
Very well. Well, I think we might have said previously that APB wasn't.
Well, we didn't know.
We had a couple of people say bring up this point.
We didn't know. APB aren't calling themselves an MMO, and there's no subscription fee. You just buy the game. There's no fee after that.
There's probably an argument that Champions isn't really. I mean, like, I was playing on a server with 32 people in the desert, and I simply couldn't do most of the ghost town missions with the ghost cowboys because there were just so many players, camping bosses and stuff. Like, 32 players is too much for the entire desert.
We need to define what massively means in massively multiplayer.
Yeah.
That should be our project for a week. I think it's more than 100.
Guild Wars, you can have... I think it's just your group in the instances, isn't it? So, like, when you go out into the wilderness, it's only you and 8 people or something.
Yeah.
But the cities are genuinely massive. Like, you'll have hundreds and hundreds of people in one city in Guild Wars.
I think the definition should be if you can have more than 100 people. Yeah. If you disagree, so Twitter us.
I think that would end up with a situation where Guild Wars is an MMO and Champions isn't.
How many people can fit on a plane?
Yeah, that's the point.
And then more than that's massively less than that. You know, you get more people in one space.
Which type of plane, though?
Yeah.
Is it a 747
or is it a Boeing 747? There you go.
Okay. Right, well, I think that's cleared it up. You won't get a clearer answer from anyone in the business. good luck, Steve. Wants to know what we think of Champions Online. I think we've covered that pretty much. The B wants to know. Something weird's going on with these. Okay, this is a follow up. With Batman, Resident Evil 5 and Red Faction all out on PC on the same day, are the days of dodgy console ports finally over? No. They will never be over.
That's the most optimistic question I've ever heard.
It
is true that Batman's a good port.
Red Faction's really
good. I don't know about the other two.
It's a good
port. Red Faction runs really well. Yeah. What was the other one?
Resident Evil.
That's a very good port as well.
Well, there are some basis for his...
On that one day, then, yes.
The days of dodgy console ports are over for that one day.
Well, these are like three companies who, you know, I mean, Saints Row 2 works really well on the PC, so THQ have taken the time over that. Capcom are redeveloping everything for the console for the PC, and you played Batman.
Yeah, it's really good except for the controls, which are a bit weird by default and really hard to change because they're as weird. Like, the options it gives you aren't all the options, and when you want to do a ground takedown, it wants you to hold shift and right mouse button. But if you've assigned something else to be shift, then you can't do that. So there are a couple of things that become impossible if you choose certain sets of keys. And it took me a long time fiddling to get it right because you have to quit the game every time you want to change your controls. So in conclusion, Batman Arkham Asylum is a terrible PC. No, it runs really well. And that's all I really care about. Ed Stern wants to know if we ever use a 360 controller to play PC games, and if so, which... Really games, that is.
Really bad games that don't do PC controls very well.
I played pretty much every lunchtime for a month Geometry Wars, but that was just using a console controller.
I use controllers when I'm in planes and like FPSs. If I'm in Battlefield, I'll get a joypad.
Mini Ninja's better with a gamepad. Batman Arkham Asylum, it's easy with a 360, like, there's no problem with it, but for like aiming grappling hooks, I prefer the mouse and keyboard.
Hitler's Must Die, I played in the Xbox.
Most racing games, so Need for Speed Shift, I'm playing with a controller at the moment.
Jess McDougal suggests we all adopt a persona for the tweets so that one of us could be very PR conscious and another could imitate John Walker.
We'll not put John Walker in our tweets.
I think you need better ideas for personas, Jess. Yeah.
There were lots of mentions of John Walker.
Who look at the crazy PR conscious guy? Yeah, I think this started... I'm reading in reverse chronological order, so there may be some background to this that we're not getting. Because John asked if... John asked why all the podcasts without him in are rubbish, and is he the main talent?
Well, I think we've significantly proven that wrong today.
Kieran then asked, which of Rock, Paper, Shotgun's ideas are you going to steal for your website? Can you steal John? We don't want him anymore.
We'd like to steal the idea of having a blog and...
Writing about games.
Having a podcast. And yeah, writing about games.
On that note, there's a survey up on our site at the moment about what you would like from a PC Gamer podcast. That PC Gamer website, obviously, podcasts would be nice as well. But we're really keen to kind of discover what you want. We've got our own ideas as well. And we're kind of starting the process of building towards a PC Gamer site. So please help us. We need you.
Please. Here's a good one. Likebox. That's no... what the best voiceover artist in the business is. Names, gentlemen, names.
Ellen McLean, who does The Woman in Portal.
Yeah, and the voice of the Combine Overwatch broadcast woman, and the announcer in TF2.
TF2 announcer, yeah. There you go.
The announcer in TF2 is getting better and better with each patch. Yeah. I think... the bug where she would declare overtime repeatedly for all the duration of overtime when they released the King of the Hill mode was just hilarious.
But they released a patch and then they released a convar to put that back in.
Yeah,
so we've totally done that now.
If you're sad that the bug was fixed, you can change your server to keep it. And we were.
So,
we
did. Yeah. So what did it do?
She goes overtime, well, overtime, 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 overtime.
Because to their enormous credit, they recorded lots of different ways for her to say overtime. And each time it's triggered, she says it a different way. So she says, overtime, overtime, overtime. But sometimes overtime goes on for about 10 minutes.
Yeah, it can go on for that long.
People start making up songs about it, like, stop overtime.
That's amazing.
If only there was a feature we could read about voice artists.
Yeah. Oh. I won't pin this issue piece again.
Why not?
We've got a feature about voice acting in it. It's amazing that question came up.
Zach to Duck asks... with the news that Audio Surf will be appearing on the Zune HD, what other indie PC games would you like to see on that and or the iPhone?
None.
I'd rather play on the PC.
Yeah. Spelunky. Although I do want
Spelunky was my answer.
I do want as in though, but they're not going to release it in Britain.
Aren't they?
No, they didn't release the last one in Britain, and this one, I think it's because in America they have HD radio and over here we have digital audio band radio, and Microsoft can't figure out how to sort that situation out. I really want one, but because it's
why
on
do you
them.
Want the Zune?
Have you not seen it?
No.
Fucking gorgeous, man. It uses NVIDIA Tegra, so it runs for days and everything's just the most beautiful thing you've ever seen in your hand.
Don't tell me this. I've spent a lot of money on gadgets in the past.
Exactly. But like I say, you can only buy applications. Apparently what they did was they got in touch with, they're getting in touch with all the people making iPhone stuff and try to get it working for the Zune. But I think they're going to start giving that stuff away for free.
What?
Because they're just, you know, Microsoft are crazy like that.
Is it touchscreen as well?
Yeah. I'll show you a video of it in the office. It's amazing.
Don't.
And it's, like I say, it's Tegra as well, so it's really energy efficient and absolutely amazing running.
Deus XM asks, or says, my favourite power-up in gaming is the whole roast chicken for restoring health. What's your favourite abstract representation?
I actually am a huge fan of the whole roast chicken, and I was very disappointed to discover that Wolfenstein doesn't include the whole roast chicken as a power-up.
I like in Spelunky when you pick up, like, you just find a stack of gold ingots that's, like, as tall as you and five times as wide, and you just walk through it and pick up, like, 100 of them in the course of a long game.
Also, women in that game are how you restore your health. Yeah. So that's fairly abstract. You get kisses, and that's how you restore your health.
That's how it works in real life.
Sandwich!
Actually, it's not very abstract, but I really love in Half-Life 2 when you kill Combine. Sometimes they'll drop like a little cylinder of health, and it's not like a normal mid-kit. It's just like a cylinder of green goo or something. And when you pick it up, it makes a really good noise. Storm Tamer wants to know... I found all my old games over the weekend, took out Battle Realms and Civ 2. What games would you play again from your old collection? I think I do play all the games that I want to play from your collection. So yeah. Deus Ex, Frontier. System Shock 2 every now and then.
For about the past 5 years, I've been meaning to get out Rise of Legends and play it properly.
Oh, yeah. Is that that's the second one, isn't it?
That's the second one. Rise of Nations, I think, is just brilliant.
Yeah. Rise of Legends, I completed one chapter of it, I think, like one set of missions. I think there were three. And I really enjoyed it because you really do get to choose how you want to go about the missions, even though they're quite scripted things and they are like defeat this evil enemy army. I was such a huge financial superpower that I could buy enemy armies, just give them enough money that they would work for me, and just kind of stormed across the map like
that. That's the mad thing about like Rise of Legends and Rise of Nations is they're very, very very complicated real time games. But there's so many cool mechanics locked up in there that have just been ignored by the rest of like the RTS genre. Ben, you've been playing Majesty today.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if it's particularly good, but it's got its own kind of weird mechanics as well. And that's another thing that, for a strategy game, it's essentially reinvented the wheel and then we'll never think of it again.
Majesty 2 is it's a RTS in which, instead of having any direct control over anyone ever, you can only just put flags on things and say, I'll give 200 gold to anyone who can kill that monster, or I'll give you 100 gold if you just explore this area.
It's
just
amazing to watch Tom play. It's brilliant.
You're like an animal.
What you find is you do that. You find a spot of fog ore you want revealed. You put 100 gold on it, and it says interested, zero. No one's interested in completing this mission.
What?
So like, okay, 300 gold to walk over there. One person's interested.
What?
Okay, I'll pay you 5,000 fucking gold to walk over there. Are you interested now? And they're like, okay, six of us will go over there, and you've got like 20 heroes you just spent ages leveling up.
Didn't you?
And even when you like attack a boss, it's like, I'll put 15,000 gold on this guy's head, and then like three people wander over one by one and get themselves slaughtered.
Didn't you end up like just dropping 100 golds?
Yeah, I was trying to tempt them out there by saying, if you explore 3 feet ahead of you for 100 gold, and then 3 feet ahead of that for another 100 gold, and then 3 feet ahead of that. So yeah, that didn't really work out for me. But it's the reason it's not completely worthless is that it's actually really interesting, the kind of system behind it, which is once you've got these heroes, the way you build them is standard RTS thing, which I think is a mistake. But once they're there, they gain experience by fighting things. They level up. And they also like need health potions and stuff. They want to go to a shop and buy it. So you build the shop, and then you equip the shop with health potions to sell them. And they spend the money they've got from you on the health potions that you're providing.
5,000
gold.
So you
get some of your cash back that way. And like each of them, it actually does keep track of how much money they have. And they'll be in a fight, they'll get into low health, and they'll start running back to base to, you know, if they run out of health potions, to heal up. And then after they've quested for a long time, they'll want to go home and like have a drink in the tavern and stuff, and just models them to an amazing extent. And you can equip your shop to sell like magic rings and stuff, and once your shop can sell like a ring of regeneration, all your heroes will eventually be able to afford it. And then you can upgrade your rogue's guild to supply poison, so they can go there and have their sword poisoned. And just watching these guys is awesome. Like, if there was a game where, you know, it wasn't like, oh my god, there's an enemy castle attacking, we have to destroy it right now, it wouldn't be so horribly awkward. Like, you get quite a lot of pleasure just from watching these guys walk around, seeing a guy level himself up to a level 17 wizard, and then choosing him as your one person to take on to the next mission.
Awesome.
But instead, like, you're being constantly attacked, so it's just like, for god's sake, walk over there, please walk over there. One point I had to bribe someone 500 gold to defend his own house, and he still didn't do it. He just walked away.
But anyway, that's not in this SGPC game or something.
No, you have to wait a long time to hear the full story on that one.
Okay, more questions? Or are we running out?
Has anyone asked about what's coming up for Christmas and what we should buy or something?
Let's pretend they have.
Or what we're excited
Smith
about or something.
Asks, what's coming up for Christmas and what should I buy?
A subscription to PC Gamer, obviously, but after that...
No, but I mean just like, you know, because November and December are generally the months, you know, we're coming up, so...
Well, it's weird. It's a weird year because everyone's basically got the hell out of spring, out of December, to get out of the way of what I assume is Call of Duty.
Apart from Valve, they're taking them on head first.
Yeah, we're head first with Left 4 Dead 2.
Yeah.
So the big three games coming out in that period are Assassin's Creed 2, Left 4 Dead 2, and Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. I mean, personally, I'm going to go for Left 4 Dead 2.
Well, yeah, me too. I had such a bad experience with Assassin's Creed. Really? Again, it's that way of not letting you get into the game the same Brothers in Arms did. I just, just give me a button that gets me in the game right fucking now.
The middle bit of Assassin's Creed, I think, is absolutely awesome, where you're given freedom to explore the cities and approach all the kind of targets. But then the ending is mad and baffling, and it kind of switches between this kind of super future place where you're locked in a room and a boss, like a steady stream of arena boss fights. No, this isn't how you make games. No. And then the start of it is just—it's just weird as well, because it's a very kind of linear sequence of events that you have to do, and it never really kind of allows you the freedom of the city that you want.
That intro where your character, without any consent from you, decides to just kill these people he's been told to stealthily stalk and not interfere with in any way, and then gets all his rank and equipment stripped from him because of it.
Yeah.
What the fuck? I've just had to spend 45 minutes of my life being shouted at for something I didn't do. One of the worst gaming experiences I've ever had at the start of the game.
The other kind of... And this, it's a really twattish thing, right? So you come off this amazing high of killing a dude, and, you know, it's a fantastic assassination. You get it right, it's perfect. You run away, you get chased through the city, adrenaline's pumping, you finally get to your kind of contact, you go down, and then you wake up from your dream in future land and get told to go to bed.
Go to bed now.
So yeah, that's why we're kind of... I mean, I like the running, and I like the sort of the idea of sneaking through someone and then run up and then jumping and stabbing them, and then running away and trying to find a bit of hay to hide in.
Yeah,
and then not being able to do it because they see you climbing, so you get out there and go and find it, and they see you again.
It does turn a bit downhill, doesn't it?
So if they fix all that, I'll be up for it. I just don't want to. And, you know, like you say, same with you, Left 4 Dead's kind of the one I'm looking for. I was looking forward to Splinter Cell, but that's not coming out this year. And I kind of hoped Call of Pripyat would be out, but I think that's been bumped as well. Because I saw the trailer for that, and it looks really atmospheric.
And it's weird because we've seen so little of Call of Duty as well. Yeah. Activision have played that so close to their chest in terms of what they're showing and what they can kind of reveal about it.
Everything I've seen has been really super high octane action stuff. Yeah. You know, it's crazy.
And it's going to be the most polished game of the year, without question.
Kale Smurf says, Osmos, possibly the most frustrating and least rage inducing game of all time at the same time. I like Osmos.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's sometimes a bit daunting. When you get to the later levels.
What is it exciting? Actually,
is it microbes or something?
Your motes, they're called, and little bubbles, basically, that are perfectly spherical. And if you bump into one smaller than you, then you absorb it and become bigger. Bump into one bigger than you, it absorbs you, and it's game over.
To move, you've got to squirt some of your own mass out. So you could end up like aiming towards something and being all big, and then squirt out too much mass, and suddenly you head towards this thing, and it can...
It's got this really nice way of representing it, where things that are bigger than you are in red, and things that are smaller than you are in blue. And as you get bigger, you'll see some red things turn blue. And sometimes if they're just on the kind of cusp of turning blue, they'll kind of go blue around the outside and still have this kind of dangerous red core, and you're kind of, ooh, am I bigger than it or not?
So it's a game in which you ejaculate yourself out as propulsion.
You get moments where you see something, as Craig says, you see something that's smaller than you, so it's like this nice blue thing that's nearly as big as you, but still smaller. So that's the perfect thing to absorb, because it will nearly double your size. And then as you kind of squirt yourself towards it, you realise you've just got a bit smaller, and it suddenly goes bright red. And fuck! And then because you're going the other direction, you're ejecting mass in its direction. And so it absorbs all those little bits of mass, and it gets even bigger. And you're like, shit! It's like twice as big as me now.
It's on our Steam accounts.
And one of the later levels, it's got like three different branches. One's with gravity, so you're all spinning around these, like in orbit, basically, around these sort of planetoid things. One's where some of the blobs are intelligent, and they're trying to consume you. And then the other one is just kind of standard levels where there's no kind of motion or things trying to kill you, but interesting twists on those. And one of them, you just start and think, I'm a bit small in this one. There's loads of things bigger than you around it, which you're used to. And then you zoom out and you realize like one of those red things was just like the corner of a much, much bigger red thing. And you keep zooming out and then you realize it's just a fucking field of like planet-sized things and you have this tiny mote of dust.
That's awesome.
Did it win anything at the IGF? Because it was one of the finalists there.
I think it won best... It did win something. I remember that.
I can't remember
what it won, but it's really atmospheric. The music's amazing.
Killfall wants to know if Tom Francis is available for private hire to spew his insightful nonsense over my ignorant friends. Friend, I'll spew anything over your ignorant friends. For a fee. Someone wants to know about another showdown.
We're doing something. Glasgow or Manchester, watch out, we're coming.
God's sake, I'm not going to any of those places.
Standard Man asks, is Games for Windows Live the worst game service ever or the worst thing ever? Batman Batman asked me to tell you, he sends his love.
It is the most rage-inducing thing I think we've ever had in the office. There's not one person who hasn't got a story about.
The official PC game review of Games for Windows Live is...
It could be simple.
And it's not a good... It's a bad...
Actually, it's causing a lot of problems. Section 8, people can't get into the game at all. And with Section 8, it makes you sign into your profile to play, but doesn't make you go online. And so I'd unlocked a load of stuff and set up all these custom character profiles and stuff. But I was on my offline profile.
See where this is going.
So then when I played at home, I had nothing.
I mean, in Steam, Grand Theft Auto, you have Steam, you have to sign into that. You have to sign it in the Grand Theft Auto Social Club, and then you have to sign it in Games for Windows Live. And that, the one thing that breaks it, Games for Windows Live.
Yeah, that's true.
Come on, dead air.
DSXM asks, has a game ever creeped you out so much you find it hard to make yourself actually play it? He still can't play EVP2.
No, because I'm strong.
I quit out of Thief Deadly Shadows when I got shouted at by a puppet. I went back to it, but I didn't go back to it that night. I went to my bed.
I've sometimes got slightly daunted by Dead Space when it's getting really, they're really piling on like the horrible stuff. And it's not so much like creepy as just constant screaming, stabbing, and explosions.
Can you help me get past a bit in Dead Space after the podcast?
Hold his hand. Tom's
technical tips.
Yeah. that dream sequence of Max Payne where there's a scream and it's like a baby scream.
Yeah.
And it just gets louder and louder. I quit out of that as well. I'm not playing that.
I remember when I first played Doom, I was very young, and for someone brought up on Enid Blyton and Secret Seven, Doom is a bit of a shock.
You born in the 50s.
Yeah. That was kind of...
See, it's weird because, I mean, I saw Robocop before I was 10, so...
Yeah.
That kind of shit doesn't bother me.
You grew up on the streets, though, didn't you?
Pip Monk wants to know if we know of any PC games playable with a laptop touchpad, because he forgot to bring his mouse. to the monastery, I assume.
Any RPG. So, any like the old Infinity Engine games, like Bioware stuff.
I'd say Spelunky, because you don't need a mouse. Can't play it with a touchpad, but... It's tricky, isn't it? Touchpads really are shit.
Yeah.
Like, they're so bad. Even just for normal Windows use. You can't have anything time-sensitive.
Good one. Audio surf. Shall we ask this question, and then we'll sign off?
It's probably the best question.
I think I've read all the ones I can find. Have you got any more, Graham?
Do you think motion control is a fad? Should people be relaxing rather than jumping about playing video games?
Don't be such a killjoy.
Well, bear in mind I was leaping around my living room last night playing Rock Band.
You did high kicks.
I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah, I did a high
We're not going to do that in the PC, let's face it. The closest we're going to get is, I know Hewlett Packard or something like that, Packard Bell, are about to release a touchscreen monitor.
Yeah,
that ties into Windows 7. So you know, maybe it'll
have to lift a finger.
but you know, it's the nature of the PC. You have it at a desk. You don't have it in, you know.
Did you ever see the South Park episode of World of Warcraft? No, the World of Warcraft episode of South Park. Where there's the kind of the guy playing who's just really good at everything, and that kind of typical PC gamer relaxation where his legs are up against, like, above his head.
He's not even holding his head up. The neck muscles will collapse.
That is essentially the pinnacle of our existence. Yeah. So far. And I think anything that breaks into that and stops us playing like that is a bad thing.
Just do it on the outside. Get a bike. Go for a run or something.
Yeah, agreed.
Okay, so I think that's it for this month. We are very sorry if this podcast is 2 weeks late like the last one was. Don't blame us. and we'll see you soon. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Bye.